And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, bombs destroy, and we know this for a fact because we had the horrific bombing in Beirut. Now, it wasn't a bomb that got dropped from the air. It wasn't a bomb that was set by terrorists, which Trump wrongly said it was. It was actually government negligence. It was the makings of a bomb, which was stored for 5 years in the middle of the city, just waiting to blow up, and it blew up, killing, hundreds of people and destroying dozens of buildings in the heart of the city and injuring thousands, and all through government negligence. Everybody agrees on that, and there are now demonstrations in Beirut that call for jailing all the politicians and overthrowing the government. But we've got the same kind of government negligence in America. We got the same kind of stuff blowing up America, whether it's the post office or Social Security or Medicare, the laying of waste of the educational infrastructure, the continuing destruction of the economy. So, and of course, all of this on the anniversary of the atomic bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. What a week.
Yeah, it was a week. I think the Beirut blast, and it was captured live by a lot of cameras, and you saw it happening from different angles. I think that was the biggest explosion in a city in the world since Nagasaki. I can't think of any other act since then that really had that kind of destructive power. This is the same kind of explosive that was used by Timothy McVeigh in Oklahoma City, only on a scale hundreds, if not thousands, of times greater. What it did. But as you said, in America, we've been blowing things up for the last 3.5 years. Things that took decades, if not centuries, to build up in here, from the postal system to the educational system to what have you. You know, we have the figures came out again this week on unemployment, not only the weekly figures but the July figures, and we continue to have new claims were almost 1.2 million, which was down from the last couple of weeks, but it's 20 weeks in a row we've had over a million people.
And don't forget, let's not let people forget, the norm is like 100,000, 150,000. That's the norm.
Right. Yeah. This is 20 weeks in a row, way beyond the norm. It's almost numbing because it's so great.
Yep.
There's 16 million continuing claims. The more telling statistic was, though, as we've tried to recover from what the virus has caused back in March and April, in May, we recovered about 2.7 million new jobs. In June, we recovered 4.8 million. But in July, things fell back and only recovered 1.8 million new jobs. And overall, only 42% of the jobs that were lost in the late winter, early spring have been recovered now through the summer. That's not a very good track record, to say the least.
I heard that there are, in fact, 30 million people unemployed looking for 5 million jobs. Now, if everybody picks up one of those 5 million jobs, there's 25 million people for whom there is no job, no matter how much they look. There's no place to look unless they emigrate. But there's no job in America for them.
Yeah, the stats are older people, some of the older people aren't looking for jobs because of fear for their health. And we're going to see that when the schools open up with teachers, particularly older teachers or teachers with pre-existing conditions who tend to be older teachers. They're not going to be wanting to go back into classrooms where kids can transmit disease very quickly, although the president says kids are immune. You know, that was another falsehood. it was even too much for Facebook and Twitter. They took down those claims this week. But, you know, the Congress has been trying to, or at least part of Congress, the House, has been trying to make government work for the people, and they've hit a roadblock. The roadblock at first was Mitch McConnell, because the House had passed this stimulus bill. Was this the fourth or the fifth one? Over 2 months ago, and it just sat on Mitch McConnell's desk until last week, and then they couldn't come to an agreement, and he sent the Senate home, and McConnell says, well, whatever the White House is agreeing to, I'll bring up. But he can't even control his own caucus. He admits that at least a third of it won't vote for any new bill, no matter what. This is what I keep saying. These are the regressives, the party who are in government but don't believe in governance. And, you know, it's a complete abrogation of what your duty is as a Congress, as a member of Congress. This is not what the founders had in mind.
I think it's a mistake to say that Congress can't deal with it. The Republicans refuse to deal with it. The Democrats are prepared to deal with it. If you say it's the Congress can't deal with it, it lets the Republicans off the hook. It lets whoever's guilty off the hook.
Yeah, you have to be careful of the wording. You're right.
Yeah. And it's unconscionable. Everybody agrees that without the $600 to the unemployed can't make it. They can't pay their bills. Everybody agrees that with the $600, small businesses stay in business. The purchasing power of the country stays where it should be. Everyone agrees that the only thing that kept poverty from advancing unbelievably and a even deeper depression developing is the $600. So this is what the Republicans refuse to continue.
Well, it's their the philosophy here that people are essentially lazy, that they, you know, that if you take away incentives, they won't work for it. And what they refuse to acknowledge that the disincentive is people don't want to go back to work to risk their health. The Republicans want people to be risking their health for things like in the meatpacking industry and what have you. And people don't want to do it. There's also something else I think that's at play that no one really mentions. If you look at $600, if you base that on a 40-hour week, that comes out to $15 an hour, if my math is correct.
Correct.
Which is what the Democrats have been asking for and saying that they intend to put in as a minimum wage if they have the power to do it. The Republicans want to have $200 a week, which if you take a 40-hour week, that's $5 an hour.
Right.
The current minimum wage is about $7.25, $7.50. So they're actually cutting the minimum wage by a third.
Right.
This is, again, their philosophy. Let's exploit labor at its cheapest cost. Let's lower the minimum wage. Some would like to do away with the minimum wage.
Now, by the way, there's another side to it. They say, well, if you get the people are making more money on unemployment, the Republicans say this, than they would make if they were working. So we have to not let that happen. They shouldn't be rewarded for not working. There's two interesting points here. First of all, that's not true. Because when you work, you don't just get your money paid. You get benefits. You get vacation pay. You get health. But the most important thing is you get health care. The second most important thing is you get paid into your Social Security fund for your retirement.
Correct.
Well, when you're on unemployment, you don't get health care. You don't get paid in on your for your Social Security. You don't accrue vacation time or sick day time or anything like that, all of which is money. That's real money. When the employer figures out how much his wage bill is, he figures in the Medicare cost, the Medicaid cost, the payroll tax cost, vacation costs. So you may think, oh, I'm making $10 an hour. But the employer said, no, 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 you're costing me 20 or 18 or something like that. And the accountant says, yeah, that's exactly right. And the IRS says, yeah, that's exactly right. So now these so-called businessmen in the Republican Party lie about what they know to be the facts and say, you're getting a disincentive. We're giving them an incentive to not work. With what? With lower pay than they would be getting if they were working? That's why everybody who has studied this has said that the $600 there's no evidence whatsoever that the $600 has kept people from taking jobs when the jobs are available. Larry Kudlow, the president's chief economic advisor, who knows about as much about being an economic advisor as I know about being an astronaut, and I know nothing about being an astronaut, was on television the other day, and he pointed out that Yale University, University of Chicago, said that there was a disincentive. Whereupon the reporter said, wait a minute, I just got off the phone with the guy who wrote that report. He said you're misinterpreting what the report says. To which Kudlow says, well, you have your professors, I have my professors.
Well, I call Kudlow the great inverse indicator, because whatever he says, the opposite tends to be true. He's the one that just before the Great Recession back in the decade or so ago said everything was going around fine. He's the guy who said in February that the virus was just about under control. The only ones less reliable than him might be Art Laffer and Stephen Moore.
Oh, why are you forgetting Donald Trump?
Well, yeah.
And speaking of Donald Trump, he gave a press conference Friday night at his club in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And if you saw the press conference, you noticed that people were cheek to jowl. People were standing there with their drinks. These were club members. No masks. Violating New Jersey law in terms of the number of people who should have been there and not wearing masks. And he said that he will, by executive order, do what the Republicans refused to do in the Congress. And, of course, whether or not he's able to do it by law, I don't know. But in other words, he's going to claim, see, vote for me, I'll solve all these problems.
Well, he's back to I alone can solve
it. I alone can solve it. But the key feature of his solution is he's going to have a payroll tax holiday. You're not going to have to pay payroll taxes until January 1st. That's a disaster for working people. First of all, it's payroll taxes paid for Social Security and Medicare. So here you are in the midst of this horrible pandemic, which is, completely out of control, killing thousands of people. As you said, there may be 300,000 dead in the next 3 months, a jump of 180,000 or 140,000.
About 130, 140.
Right. And his proposal is cut spending for medicine. Paying in for medicine. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Well, first of all, that only applies to people who actually have jobs.
That's right.
All these people, like we said, 58% of the people haven't been able to recover their jobs. So there's no payroll tax relief for them because they're not on a payroll.
But the employers will get the employers who are paying people, they'll get relief because about 17% is what the payroll taxes are. The employers pay half. So it amounts to an 8.75% tax benefit to the employers.
Yeah. He also said something else that he was going to do, coming across like a hero. And he said, well, I'm going to protect pre-existing conditions for medical expenses. And the fact of the matter is that already is the law. That's what Obamacare is.
That's what he's trying to get rid of.
And he's in court trying to get rid of it.
Right.
I'm not sure he fully understands that, but if he does, the hypocrisy is monumental on this. Of course, he got called out on his hypocrisy by that reporter from Axios, Jonathan Swan, this week, who did something that most interviewers don't do, and that is he followed up on questions. He listened. Instead of saying, "Oh, I've got 20 questions and going on to the next question," he anticipated what the answers would be, and he really took Trump apart. Trump's great line was when he was confronted with the people dying, and he said, "Well, it is what it is.
It is what it is.
It is what it is." And immediately the Biden campaign made an ad out of that, that type of thing. One more thing I do want to point out in these deadlocked talks with, between Congress and the Senate's not really taking part of it, is the philosophical fight over aid to the states. The Republicans, the regressives, are steadfastly saying we're not going to give any money to the states. In particular, they don't want any money to the blue states. If this was just giving money to the red states, they'd be all over it. But they don't want to give money to the blue states. They say they've mishandled their budgets before, and to some extent, that's true. But the fact of the matter is the states have been on the front lines of the fight against the virus. They've had to go out and buy equipment at higher costs because the federal government wouldn't step in. Trump wouldn't effectuate the Defense Production Act and things like that. And what happens if the states go bankrupt? I mean, the shock to the economy is just totally enormous.
But it really has nothing to do with the states. What it really has to do with is they want to get rid of the employees who work for state government because they're all unionized. In fact, they are the last bastion of union strength in the country. So if they don't give the money to the states have nothing to do. They can't do anything except lay off these workers, which will destroy those unions. That's the whole point. They don't give a damn about the states. They don't care about the people. After all, this money, much of it goes for education in the states, right? The educational system is in tatters. Nobody knows how it's going to run. And the Republicans are going to help it out by making sure it gets even less money. So there's nothing you can say about it that's good. And the short-term point of it is, I want to get rid of these unions. This will do it.
Yeah, and of course, the postal union's another one they want to get rid of.
Yeah.
And they're doing the same thing there. They have patented a way of doing things. Is what they do is they shortchange the agency or the governmental unit. And then they say, see, it's not working right. Therefore, we should cut it more and take away more of it.
And that's exactly what they did with the post office, as you say.
Right.
They put in an impossible demand that they forced the post office to meet. Namely, they have to pay in advance 40 years worth of benefits, retirement benefits. 41 years?
I think 75 years in advance.
Some enormous number that no one in the world imagines can be done or should be done. And the Postal Service has to produce a fund to pay for all the possible retirement benefits for what? 70 years. 70 years.
Advance.
Unbelievable.
In the future.
70
yeah.
years. Well, on that yeah. basis, they lose money. If they had to do what every other company does in terms of setting up the proper funds, they'd be rolling in dough.
Yeah. And don't forget, the Postal Service does things that others don't. People rely on the Postal Service for things like medications,
yep.
because more and more health plans require you to use one of their centralized drugstores where they send things out by mail. And there's other things. For instance, people mail out their credit card payments. And if those things don't get there on time, if they're delayed, first of all, if the bill is delayed coming in, and then it's delayed delivering, you get hit with $35 a month charges plus 19 or 29% interest payments and things like that.
But the most important thing to me is that if you want to make sure that the election is rigged, you got to make sure that people can't vote by mail and right. you don't allow the post office to operate properly so that you screw up completely voting by mail, which is what this short-term guy, Trump, is consumed with. He wants to make sure voting by mail doesn't work. And the best way is to make sure that the mail doesn't work, which is what he's doing.
Well, I think the best way the postal union can handle it is deliver all of the ballots to people and all the ballots from people as quickly as possible and forget the rest of the stuff.
Yeah, but you know, the letter carriers can't decide what to deliver. They got to do what their bosses tell them to, and Trump appoints the boss.
Well, they get to sort the mail, though.
So that's true. That's true. But you know what'll happen if they do that? There'll be a spate of firings for not following instructions.
Yeah.
That's what'll happen. And unless the unions are strong enough to stand up to that, and they're not yet that strong, they're going to have to do what they're told to do, which is
They can't go on strike, right? That would just do those things. So, I mean, what we had that. You know, we had some election stuff this week. We had some primaries and what have you, with some interesting results. Michigan had a primary. There was one of the members of the squad, the first Palestinian woman to be elected to Congress, Rashida Tlaib, who's run into a lot of criticism, won her primary against African-American opponent named Jones out of the Detroit area. And she won it quite easily. These two women have been fighting it out now for a couple of terms. There was an election in Kansas that was good news and bad news. The good news was that Chris Kobach, who was the engineer of all this voter suppression and going through and purging rolls of voters because somebody in Kansas has the last name of Gonzalez and somebody in Georgia has the same last name, so both of them must be the same person. Let's take them both off the rolls. He lost his primary fight to run for the U.S. Senate. It's good that he isn't going to be running or have a chance of winning. It's bad because had he been the candidate, the Democrats might have had a better chance of winning that seat.
Because he's already lost a statewide election.
Yeah, yeah. The people of Kansas got sick of his kind of politics when they saw what it really did to the state. And in Missouri, we had another longtime serving Democratic congressman by the name of Clay, who's succeeded his father in the election. They'd held that seat for a half a century. He fell asleep and he got beat in the primary by a progressive African-American woman. In the St. Louis area, she's going to be. It's
very interesting because she got into politics with the Ferguson demonstrations.
Yes, yes. And by the way, in St. Louis, also the African American state's attorney, or however they are, district attorney, won as well her race there. That was something. But I think the bigger news in Missouri was that the people there voted to expand Medicaid. And, you know, Missouri's been a pretty reliably red state of late. This is another one of these red states like Oklahoma, Nebraska, Utah, Idaho, and even Maine, which isn't that red anymore, where the people have said, we want the expanded Medicaid and over the opposition of the Republican Party. In their legislatures. So it shows.
And you had an interesting campaign loss by Joe Arpaio in Phoenix.
Yeah. He barely lost, but he was running for his old... Well, he was running in the primary.
Yeah, he was running for the Republican nomination.
Yeah.
His loss is interesting because it's not a general election loss. It's a Republican Party loss.
Yeah, but the guy who beat him essentially ran on Arpaio's ticket, you know, his policies. And although it appears that when they get to the general election, the way Arizona's been trending, that the Democrat is likely to win that that seat anyway.
The Democrat has the seat. The sheriff is a Democrat. Yeah,
he's going to stay there. In Wisconsin, we saw something interesting. The Trump administration, the Trump people are so worried about Wisconsin now that they decided that they better put Kanye West up to try to siphon votes away from Joe Biden, hoping that the African-American community in Milwaukee and elsewhere would vote for Kanye West. So the GOP operatives were working on making sure that he had enough signatures and delivering the signatures. I don't know if it's going to withstand the scrutiny. I saw a couple of petition papers that were put on the internet. One was signed by Mickey Mouse. One was signed by Bernie Sanders. One was actually signed by Kanye West himself, although he doesn't live there. So there was some phoniness, as there is in every petition drive. We'll see if that stands up. It didn't stand up in Illinois, by the way. They didn't get enough signatures. So, but it shows that they're really, really worried about these states. I'll tell you something
that they're really doing, which goes way beyond stunts like promoting Kanye West. The Trump Organization, which, had a shakeup a couple of weeks ago, right? He fired the guy who was running it, and he put in new people to run it, including headed by the fellow who was Chris Christie's fixer and bag man in New Jersey. Sure. Right. And he brought in a couple of people, or more people than a couple of people, to be his top aides. Now, the interesting thing is about the people that he brought in, these were people who were all involved previously in voter suppression attempts. That's their experience. That's what they deal with, how to suppress the vote. It turns out that the Trump Organization in the various states has initiated 98 lawsuits, each one appropriate to whatever state it's in, each one aimed at making sure people can't vote easily or can't vote at all. And they have an entire infrastructure devoted to making sure people have difficulty voting. And they have a national strategy for this. And they have a budget that amounts to $66 million only for this. Now, that's already a serious thing. After all, we're only, 3 months out? And I can't see that the Democrats have any kind of infrastructure or any kind of budget like this to counter this. In Pennsylvania, every county in Pennsylvania has been sued in order to prevent the county from administering voting by mail. Now, the suit may not get anywhere, but the suit is progressing, and it might get somewhere. Who knows? That's Big Apples.
Yeah, and the Democrats have they've known about this kind of suppression for a long time, and they've I can't see any tangible results of their efforts to stymie this stuff.
Well, the Biden campaign has no national strategy for this kind of thing.
Right. Now, Stacey Abrams is working on something like this, and there are other organizations that have been formed to help formulate protect the vote.
That's right, but they're not part of the campaign. They're outside the campaign, and they have to raise their own money, and they have to do whatever they can do, basically with volunteer lawyers.
It's
no way to do the job.
No. By the way, Biden, he was supposed to pick a VP last week. We were hearing it might be this week. It's going to have to be soon because, he said he's not going to go to Wisconsin now. He's going to accept the nomination in Delaware. And of course, Trump said he, after making all that noise about, well, North Carolina doesn't want to support me, so I'm going to go to Florida. Now he's saying he's going to do a backyard acceptance speech, and the backyard being the White House, the people's house.
Which is probably illegal, but he'll get away with it.
He'll get away with it. Who's going to stop him? Who's going to stop him?
Right.
Part of the strategy is to do so many things that are illegal in so many areas that you can't keep up with it.
Right. Right.
And it's hard, for our show to keep up with things from week to week.
I wanted to talk about TikTok and as an example of the Trump's foreign policy, but we have no time to talk about TikTok. The clock has TikTok past us.
Yes, it
has. So we'll maybe do that next time because the issue won't go away. The issue is, should you use mafia methods in running foreign economic relations if you're running the foreign policy of the United States? Anyway, that's all we've got for this week.
Well, we'll see you next week. I'm sure we'll have as much to talk about as we did this week.
Yep.
Stay safe.
Yep. You too. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.